Welcome to the CanMed Coffee Talk podcast, where we talk with the leading minds in cannabis science, medicine, cultivation, and safety testing. I am your host, Ben Amaralt. I'm the marketing manager at Medicinal Genomics and proud member of the team who puts on the CanMed conference. A few housekeeping items before we introduce this episode's guest. Check out canmedevents.com for all the latest information about the CanMed 24 Innovation and Investment Summit, happening this May in Marco Island, Florida. CanMed 24 is an all-inclusive event featuring world-class content, four-star accommodations, ample networking opportunities, and meals and drinks included. Be sure to sign up for email alerts at canmedevents.com so you don't miss any announcements leading up to this year's event. If you plan to join us in Florida, I encourage you to buy your tickets now. Space is limited this year and rooms are filling up. And if you can't join us this year, you can still stay connected with the CanMed community by following us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. Just search for CanMed Events. And you can also enjoy free access to all the podcast archive episodes, as well as videos of all the past CanMed presentations in our CanMed video archive at canmedevents.com. Our guest this episode is Dr. Kimberly Gwynn. Kim is a professor of entomology and plant pathology at the University of Tennessee. Her lab currently investigates natural products that are produced by plants and microbes and their use as medicines and as biopesticides. At CanMed 24, she will present hemp processing byproducts as biopesticides, which describes her team's work using terpene-rich industrial hemp byproducts to control plant diseases and pests. We discuss why terpenes are effective biopesticides, which pathogens and pests terpene-rich biopesticides can fight, what are nanoemulsions and why are they important to this application, how this technology can open up a new revenue stream for growers, the regulatory lift for getting biopesticides approved, and more. Before we get to my conversation with Kim, I'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, Rare Earth Genomics. Rare Earth Genomics is a dynamic partnership formed with Texas A&M AgriLife, one of the world's leading research institutions, to accelerate hemp research and create tools for farmers. Their mission is to increase the likelihood of a successful harvest for farmers through genetic analysis and rigorous environmental testing of vigorous cultivars. Learn more at rareearthgenomics.com. Okay, and without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Kimberly Gwynn. Good morning, Kim. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Good morning. It is delightful to be here.
All right. I am excited to talk with you today about a novel technology that you and your team have developed to use hemp-derived terpenes as biopesticides. Of course, you will be presenting this work at CanMed 24 this May in Marco Island. But I think a good place to start with this conversation would be for you to explain how your team came up with this idea and why you started investigating it.
I have been very interested in biopesticides for a number of years. I think that they are a good way for we can be more environmentally friendly in agriculture. One of the problems with biopesticides is where do we get our materials? And so I have been looking in several different areas for agricultural byproducts. And those byproducts can bring more revenue to growers. So that was kind of my take on it. My colleague, Dr. Toni Wong, is a food scientist, and she's been very involved in developing these nanoemulsions for different reasons. And so we've teamed together to develop this biopesticide.
Excellent. So what kind of led you down the path of using terpenes from as the hemp byproducts?
Yeah, terpenes are great. Terpenes are like one of these things that we can use for a number of different things. You think about terpenes, you think about their smell.
Right.
They're volatile. So they can be used to prevent things from happening, like an insect landing. They can also be used to encourage an insect to land. So you've got to be very careful. They will also affect how a fungus can grow. So, and they are part of the plant's natural defense system. So what we are doing is taking the hemp. We're just using hemp in this work. We take the hemp and we use its natural defense chemicals, and we turn those around and bottle them and turn them into an emulsion, and then use them as biopesticide.
So when you talk about, you know, byproducts, so is this hemp being grown particularly for CBD or cannabinoids? And then, so you're sort of using the cast off terpenes to create this biopesticide?
Correct. Correct. We are only looking at what is coming from the CBD, because that is where a lot of the terpenes are being discarded. When they go for the cannabinoids, then the terpenes are left behind. And that's what we are interested in.
Great. So do growers need to sort of modify how they're already getting the cannabinoids to be able to sort of access these terpenes? How does that work?
I think, you know, the product, at least in hemp, is the CBD and is the cannabinoids. So manufacturers, the extractors, want to maximize that. And leaving behind the terpenes is not part of their business plan. They don't really care about the terpenes, except, you know, whenever you're looking at the whole product, then you do care about the terpenes, because that's what allows you to have particular types of smells and tastes.
Great. So you mentioned before that you've been investigating biocontrol agents for quite some time. Mm-hmm. So what are some other solutions that are available to growers, and how do they differ from this approach?
If you look at the EPA's list of pesticides that are approved for hemp production, you will find pretty much only biopesticides. I think there's one conventional, and it's an herbicide. Most of them are from the neem plant, mm-hmm. and also some microorganisms. So some microorganisms are very, very helpful in controlling the natural environment on the plant. So plants are just like us. They have a microbiome. So part of their microbiome is actually effectively fights off the pathogens. So what we do with a biocontrol agent is we put that on the plant and help the plant stimulate its natural defenses. And also some of those actually actively fight against pathogens.
So you mentioned hemp specifically. So that was going to be one of my questions was, is this biocontrol agent specific to whether it be hemp or cannabis, or could this potentially be used on other crops as well?
We've expanded to other crops. We've been testing some cucurbits this past year, both in the greenhouse and in the field.
Excellent. And now, what are the pathogens that you're sort of targeting with this approach? You mentioned insects. Is it also, I know there's fungi, there's bacteria, there's weeds. Is it sort of all of the above, or are there specific ones that you're looking for?
One of the things that you have to be careful about when you develop a natural biopesticide is that it is not phytotoxic. So in its very, very most concentrated form that we could possibly make, it could be used as an herbicide, but that's probably not going to be where we go with it.
Right.
We've actually been able to control powdery mildew on hemp with this, and it's worked as well as any of the commercial products.
Excellent.
Better than some of them too.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. And I know powdery mildew, that's one of the big ones. What other sort of targets are you looking for?
I've just recently switched my interest to fusarium pathogens. And so we've been screening different fusarium pathogens. This hasn't been done on the plant, but it's been done in the lab. And we get very effective growth control on the fusarium.
Excellent. So you mentioned nano emulsion. For those listeners and hosts who might not be familiar with what exactly that is. Could you sort of explain?
Well, let's go back to the very basics on it. The very basics are, what is an emulsion? So you can think about an emulsion as very, very simple as making salad dressing. You take your oil and your vinegar and you shake it and you get something that looks very different than oil and vinegar. That's an emulsion. Now, that's going to be a very, very weak emulsion. It's going to separate out in some cases before you can even get it out of the bottle onto your salad. But what we do with a nano emulsion is we make those little oil droplets very, very, very small. Nano means like 10 to the ninth when you're talking about things. And so we make these very small and we suspend the terpenes in these compounds, in these little oil bubbles, essentially, and they will stay in solution. We've been able to keep them on the lab bench at room temperature for over 2 years.
Wow. And so it's in water?
It's in water, and we use a natural soap. It's called Tween. And basically, we are going for things that are extremely safe. So we only use products in what we're doing that are considered to be GRAS. And GRAS is GRAS. And it's an FDA category that's generally regarded as safe. So the bottom line is, this is a pesticide that you could probably eat. No, I wouldn't advise it. But you could probably eat it. It smells very strong, but we are trying to make it as safe as possible.
Excellent. No, I'm glad you brought that up, because obviously, yeah, terpenes, they smell. Mm-hmm. And so if you're adding these to the plant, is it going to affect, I mean, if it's cannabis, it's one thing, but if you're looking to put this on other crops, is it going to affect the smell, taste of those crops?
I think that we would have a limit on how late we can spray this on some crops. For example, you wouldn't want to dunk your apple in it and keep that as a post-harvest. Mm. But if you spray like the cucurbits, we didn't affect the quality of those by doing earlier sprays. And we did not spray the fruit themselves. So in most cases, we're not looking for the plant as the product. We're looking at, a fruit. So you just have to be careful when you can spray those. And also remember that terpenes are ephemeral. Even ours will eventually go away, but I have a feeling that we won't be using them on post-harvest because I think it will affect consumer taste.
Great. And now there are a number of different terpenes that the plant produces as well. Are there specific ones that you're interested in?
We have not focused on any specific one. And the reason is we want to be able to use these byproducts. And so we have used, we've done this technology for a couple of different extractions, and we seem to get the same effects. So I think when an extractor goes in, they have all kinds of different plant types and cultivars that they're right. using. So we really can't control that if we're using it as a waste product. So we do have this analyzed, and we know what the terpenes are. We know what, residual CBD is there. But we are trying our best not to really pay that much attention to that. Look at it as a whole product. But the ones that are there are the ones that when we test them in the lab are antifungal and anti-insect compounds.
Okay. So is this not limited to just terpenes? Or, I mean, I know I just spoke with a gentleman who published this whole paper about other compounds that produce aromas. There's esters and all these other names that I'm not, I can't recall. So are those coming along for the ride too? Or are you kind of specifically sticking to terpenes?
We've focused on terpenes because that's really what is the dominant smell in there. We know those will provide the compound, the activities that we are interested in. Yeah. cannabis sativa is like the miracle plant as far as metabolism goes. It produces so many different compounds. I think there's a paper out there from several years ago that calls it the plant of thousands of molecules. And it's, you know, we don't know what's coming along for the ride. We do know that CBD, we have a, you know, a small percentage of the CBD is in there as well, and some of the CBG.
And so is the extraction technique that's used, does that play a role here too? Are there certain ones that are better for this than others?
We've been looking primarily at ones that have had an ethanol extraction. We, I don't know that the same type of material is evolved when you use supercritical.
Great. And now, so what is the goal here? Is it that eventually growers will be able to sort of formulate their own biopesticides, or is that something that sort of a specific company that needs to do?
Yeah, I think you're probably going to have that done by somebody, because our equipment is very expensive. It's a high sonication. You can make it, but it's not going to be as good as ours. It's not going to stay in solution. You can make it with a sonicator. But this is a high speed sonicator, and we've spent a lot of time getting the conditions that we produce it just right. I mean, but if you have that material, you can certainly replicate it. We've published our methods. So,
but could it be something that, you know, growers sort of, I mean, it'd be an extra revenue stream for them, that they could be providing that, that waste material to your company or whoever's going to develop this, and then they could turn that into.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
The dream is to get extra revenue for growers, get a safe biopesticide for producers, and you know, expand this, because you know, if you have something that is naturally broken down by whatever's in the environment, on the plant, in the soil, and that type of thing, that's, these natural products are broken down easily, more easily than synthetics, and then you have something that's environmentally friendly, you have something that growers get an extra revenue stream from, and that, you know, and it works. So if you have all of those three things, you've got the kind of the pillars of developing a biopesticide.
Great. And so where are we at in terms of sort of evaluating whether it works or actually getting to market? So kind of where are you at there?
Well, I'm hoping that the interest from CanMed will bring people around that want to invest in it, to be honest with you. We would love to see this go into a company and develop this technology so that it could be available to everyone.
Yeah. And so what is sort of the, how do you get something like this approved? What are the sort of agencies that dictate that?
It's EPA. And there are rules for biopesticides, for developing those, that are less stringent than those for synthetics, because most of those things are natural. Mm-hmm. So we would go through the EPA. We would then, you know, we would tell them everything that's in ours, and how it is used and how it's formulated, and then we would show them the efficacy, because they don't approve it unless it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And they will do that. But they have approved other essential oils like garlic oil, rosemary oil. Those types of things are already approved as biopesticides, and some of the same terpenes are in those as well.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions too, because I know that, you know, cannabis, hemp, that's not the only plant that produces terpenes. So are there other products out there that utilize terpenes?
Yes. And then that, essentially, when you hear the word essential oil, that's probably a terpene mix. We've looked at, in the past, I've looked at terpenes from a genus of mint called Monarda, which is bee balm. Mm-hmm. And it's got the most amazing different types of terpenes based on cultivar. We actually were able to chemotype them by their terpene chemistry.
So you had mentioned other biocontrol agents before, and that sometimes they use actually microbes, whether it be bacteria or things like that. And I know that those can actually contribute to some of these total count tests that growers right. need to pass in order to get the products to market, whether it's total yeast and mold or total bacteria. So I would imagine that this would be helpful for those growers because it's not using those microbes.
Right. And that's one of those things as we talked about the, you know, when you harvest, you know, this might be helpful in reducing those counts. But we've tested it against Fusarium, which is one of the pathogens that affects the inflorescence, but we haven't done any other testing. So for right now, that's sort of conjecture on my part, but it's something that we definitely want to look into.
Yeah, that's sounds definitely promising. I know that, you know, growers are struggling a lot with Aspergillus being one of them and and Pythium as well. So I'm sure those are already on your radar.
Aspergillus is definitely on our radar because Aspergillus can cause problems in humans. It can colonize the lungs and cause a syndrome called aspergillosis. Yeah. And that has been connected with cannabis use, but in immunocompromised people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's rare, but something we definitely we like to test for. All right, Kim. Well, winding down here, I want to give you the opportunity to share any other links or mention any other resources that folks might be interested to read more about, sort of the work that you're doing, and then also any websites, social media, any ways that folks can kind of get in touch with you or learn more about the work you're doing.
I'm sort of an old school scientist, so I don't have a lot of social media presence, but we are working right now on some of the Fusarium pathogens, looking at how to control those in the inflorescence and looking at the potential that they have for producing mycotoxins. So we're looking at that as that's where a lot of my future work will be focused. And hopefully I can combine these two and we can use this to control Fusarium in the inflorescences, because I think that it's probably more of a problem than we think. Lots of Fusarium disease out there in greenhouse production as well as field production.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are kind of just launched a new Fusarium assay for growers, which has been very popular. And I know that there's one scientist that's going to be at CanMed, Dr. Zamir Punja, who's done a lot of research into that. So hopefully you guys can connect on Marco Island.
Yeah, Zamir and I have published together, and we actually we're at the same institution at one point. So we're very familiar with each other.
All right, well, then you guys will get to catch up.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, Kim, for the time. And I look forward to meeting you in person at CanMed 24.
All right. Thank you. And I will, I'll see you there.
Great.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kimberly Gwynn. Check out the links in the show description to learn more about the topics we discussed. And thanks to this episode sponsor, Rare Earth Genomics. Our next episode drops May 1st. That's 2 weeks from today. In the meantime, go to canmedevents.com to check out all the details related to CanMed 24. Speakers, poster presenters, networking events, panels, workshops, meals, and more. All the information is there. While you're at canmedevents.com, sign up for email alerts so you don't miss any announcements before the event. If you are planning to join us in Florida this May, register for your ticket package now. Space is limited and tickets are going fast. I also invite you to follow us on social media. We are on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook. Just search for CanMed Events. And lastly, please rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. All right, that's it from us. Stay safe, stay healthy, and be sure to join us for the next CanMed Coffee Talk.